And welcome to We the People Radio. Well,
welcome to you, too.
My name's Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
I'm subdued, Aaron Ryan. I should reclassify myself. I'm having a little stomachache today. So if I disappear for short periods of time, you'll be talking to Bill.
And I'll keep a sharp eye out.
Eagle eye. So let's see. You can find all the information about the program at wethepeopleradio.us. And .net, and .org, and .everything, but .com.
Not .com.
Yeah, some knucklehead took .com and is wasting it. But anyway, we've got it all posted for you up there. And there's quite a bit of information. Typically on each program, we put quite a bit about our guests and anything that we reference, links and stuff like that. So if you're driving or you're sitting outside working, you know, working on yard work or doing something else, you can always catch up on all that afterward. And we also post a commercial-free archive afterward. I've never thought really to mention it, but those are free. Robert always takes the, we celebrate the capitalism during the program, and then afterward we sort of cut the capitalism off at the knees and just post it without that. So it's really quick for you to catch up with part of the program you maybe missed. So, okay, today we've got two different topics. The Secretary of State race in the state of California. Now, if you're not in the state of California and you're thinking, well, who cares about that? I'm going to bet you money you don't know a whole lot about what the Secretary of State does and why you care. And since California is as screwed up as it is, it's a wonderful example of what needs to be changed. We also hear quite a bit about voter fraud and it's not really happening, blah, blah, blah. Our guest today will give you a real eye-opener. Be fantastic. And second hour, we're talking about Syria. So,
great.
So Bill's trying to butt in here so that he can add the sponsor.
Okay, this is me butting in. Our sponsor this hour is Team Power. Team Power is our local John Deere Kubota dealer. And if you want a great deal on a tractor, go see them at 3119 Twinview Boulevard. And their phone number is 226-9226. And they're stuffed to the gills with tractors right now. So go up there and see what they have on hand.
And mowers.
And mowers, yeah. We do it all.
Mowers and mowers.
Yeah, go up there and see what they have and get yourself fixed up. Team Power.
Parts, service, sales. That's you guys right. Do it all.
That's right.
Nice. So Mark is in there. Good afternoon, Mark.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Okay, so your last name looks like something, it looks to be pronounced not the way it is actually pronounced, and you had a really handy way to make people remember, so before I screw it up, I'm going to let you do it.
With Moisure, you are more sure of fair and free election.
There you go.
I like it.
I was like, darn it, what did he say before? I thought, if I do it wrong, it'll be wrong the whole time.
But for those people who want to know how to spell it, it's M-E-U-S as in Sam, E-R. But again, it's Moisure.
Right. So, and I like that. You're more sure of fair and free elections. So, I know we you know, it seems like, oh, we have an hour so we can talk forever, but there's a lot of information that you brought to the table when I heard you speak a couple weeks ago about what's going on in the state of California, which makes a, let's see, we'll just call it a really strong case for some change.
Well, I guess let's start off with the couple of the statistics that actually caused me to decide that it was time to be, as an election attorney, it was time for me to step up and actually get in to the Secretary of State's race. Because the Secretary of State's race, you are the chief election officer of the state. And that means you are responsible throughout the state of California to make sure we have fair and honest elections. That is your number one responsibility. Now, there are some other responsibilities that the Secretary of State has, but for the purposes of this conversation today, we'll probably focus 95% of our time on elections, because that is what most people want. Most people want those who are eligible to vote, that everybody who's eligible to vote, who votes, that their vote counts. So let's start off with some scary statistics. There are 11 counties in the state of California, and understand we have 58 counties. There are 11 counties with over 100% registration, which means there are more people on the voter rolls then are eligible to vote.
Now, there are some folks that are really concerned with government. They're all out there, and they're all registered. Is that what you're saying?
Twice.
Twice.
So, yeah, tell Bill I didn't tell him how many are registered in Los Angeles County, because that was truly the shocker for me.
Yeah. In Los Angeles County, understand, the most populous county in the nation, there is 144% voter registration.
Wow.
Now, to put that in context, their neighbors to the south in Orange County, which has a register of voters, a county register of voters, who actually does his job of cleaning up the voter rolls, they only have like 87, 88% voter registration.
Which is still pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, that is kind of, you know, the register of voters in Orange County is very active in comparing his data with databases, government databases, private databases, and he's doing what he can to make sure that only those people who are eligible to vote are on the voter rolls. Now, he's not perfect, but, you know, he has about 87% voter registration, while his neighbors to the north is 144%, and his neighbors to the south down in San Diego are 138%. So that's where you start seeing there's a problem here. And as Secretary of State, you are the one who is responsible for making sure that the counties are doing their job. So if the counties are not doing their job, the fault lies, yes, with the counties, but it also lies with the Secretary of State, who has the broad powers to basically come in and say, you're not doing your job, you have to do it, and if you don't do it, the Secretary of State is going to take over the job and make sure you do it.
Hmm. Yeah, you guys are literally the safety net. And same too, if like we had up here at the north end of the state, they had some voter fraud that they reported to the Secretary of State 2 years ago.
Yeah,
2 years ago.
All sorts of accusations of bribery and.
Yeah.
You know, it's a pretty scary story, and, you know, it's sad. You know, it's voter fraud. When it gets reported to the media says, oh, voter fraud doesn't exist. And
right.
If they find a story like down in San Diego where hundreds of people have been dead for over 20 years, yet have voted in more than 10 elections, that story gets coverage for a couple hours and then it's buried, whereas, you know, other stories are going to just run for days upon days upon days. And it's, you know, the media may cover it from time to time, but generally speaking, it doesn't serve their narrative that, you know, there is no voter fraud. I mean, just yesterday I was talking to a county register of voters, and I have, from his county, people who have told me they've seen buses go from precinct to precinct to precinct casting illegal votes. And they have told me that they have told this person. And so when I was talking to this particular county registered voter, I said, well, what about the problem of the buses going from precinct to precinct in your county? And he's like, oh, it doesn't exist. And why doesn't it exist? Because he doesn't investigate, because it doesn't fit his narrative that there is no such thing as voter fraud.
As long as
they
the elections
want
are
to look at.
Going his way, I mean, hey, why get all up in their business, you know? So we have to take a quick break here, but before we do, I just wanted to let people know that Mark's a native Californian, small business owner, committed to fighting for honest and fair elections. And he started as an entrepreneur at the age of 12. Got an interesting history on here. We'll give you little bits along the way. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
All the gold. So if you're dreaming about California, it don't matter at all where you play.
Make it fast, make it urgent. Do it quick, do it urgent.
Mark, we were talking about
voter fraud and busing people from precinct to precinct. How in the world can these counties control that if you don't have to have ID when you vote? How do you stop people from going from precinct to precinct?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question because I want to take us back in time for a little bit. Mm-hmm. I want to take you back to a special election in Oakland, California, in 1883. The state of California had just been around for a couple years, and there was a special election, and as soon as the special election was over, the challenger and the incumbent showed up in Sacramento, both declaring themselves the winner. And the challenger basically said, you know, Mr. Carpenter, the assemblyman from Oakland who was up for the special election, said, you know, he cheated. He stole the election. And what they found was that there were 35 people who were on the ferry going from Oakland back to San Francisco that night who had been paid $5 each to cast an illegal ballot. And some of them had voted as many as seven times. And this was a problem that was going on across the nation. We know a couple years later in Kansas, where people came across from Missouri into Kansas to vote whether Kansas was going to be a slave state or a free state. We could go to the Tammany Hall days of the late 1860s, early 1870s in New York, where people would come across from New Jersey or down from upper New York to cast illegal ballots. There was a great problem in the nation, which came to be that people just did not trust their elections. And so what ended up happening across the nation was voter registration. And with voter registration, you were able to, know where somebody was voting. They couldn't vote from, you know, you couldn't go to another precinct. You couldn't go vote multiple times throughout a day, because if you had only so many voter registrations, you know, you couldn't cast illegal ballots. It was much harder to cast illegal ballots. Well, when you have 144% voter registration, you have to understand, how do you get to 144% voter registration in LA? And the first way happens if somebody dies. Second way is if somebody moves. Third way is if there's a duplicate voter registration. Fourth way is if there's a fictitious voter registration. And a fifth way is if a non-citizen gets on the voter rolls. So let's cover the first one, death. When, you know, this story took place in November of 2016, a young man named Brandon. Brandon went to the polls to vote, and at the polls, he looked at the voter roll as he was signing his name, and he realized that his grandfather had already voted that day. The thing is, was his grandfather had been dead for 15 years. Now, somebody figured out that Brandon's grandfather had been dead. They knew that there's, no voter ID requirements. So they were able to come in, say that they're Brandon's grandfather. They were given a voter slip. They signed Brandon's grandfather's name, and they were able to cast an illegal ballot. You can get these buses to go from precinct to precinct to precinct with very minimal effort of just studying the voter rolls and seeing who's dead, see who's moved out of the state, see the duplicate voter registrations, the fictitious registrations, or the non-citizens on the voter rolls, and go, okay, these votes, these people are not going to vote. So what we do is we go in and we pretend we're those people. So by simply cleaning up the voter rolls of only those people who are eligible to vote, while you do not completely reduce fraud, you do make it much harder to commit fraud because of the fact that only those people who are eligible to vote are on the voter rolls. And then you're going to have a lot higher voter turnout because only the people on the rolls are the people who are eligible to vote. And so that is one of the first ways that you go to decrease the ability of these people to go from precinct to precinct to precinct, is when you get in there ahead of time and make sure only people who are eligible to vote are able to vote. I can tell you a story about George down in Temecula, which is Riverside County. The first time he voted, he showed up at the polls and said, "Hey, George Temecula, I would like to vote." And they said, "You'd already voted that day." and he says, "No, I haven't. Look at my driver's license. Look at my signature. I have not been here." All he was able to do was give a provisional ballot, which did not count because his ballot had already been cast that day. So, yes, voter ID is what we call a 70% issue in the state of California. People really want it. Now, as Secretary of State, I am not your legislature. I cannot cast a ballot. Instead, as Secretary of State, I actually enforce the law. But as I get out there and I talk about the Georges of Temecula, the Brandons of the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles, and as I share these stories of people who have actually seen voter fraud in this state and how people have taken advantage of the security of our ballot, people are starting to wake up and go, we need to do something about it. And there, even what happened in Rhode Island is the people all of a sudden demanded that their legislature give them voter ID. And Rhode Island's not a conservative state, so if Rhode Island could get their legislature to give them voter ID, we could do the same thing here in California. But we also have another tool here in California, which is called ballot propositions. And, you know, as I use the bully pulpit of the Secretary of State to highlight how unsecure our elections are, how much fraud is going on in our elections here in the state of California, we are going to see that the people are going to call their legislatures, or we're going to be able to get momentum going on a ballot proposition, and we're going to get it on the ballot where the people will be able to order that they have more security in their ballot. I mean, to give you an idea how bad our elections are here in the state of California, according to a liberal think tank, California has the second-ranked elections in the nation. And that's not second from the top, that's second from the bottom. Second-worst elections in the nation. Now, some people might say, well, yeah, it's not good to be the second-worst elections in the nation, but we live in the United States of America. We've taught the world how to vote. We are the, you know, city on the hill. We have shown the world what it means to have representative government. Well, in a recent Harvard study of the 28 Western democracies in the world, on the issue of election integrity, the United States ranks 28th. We, of the Western democracies, we have the most insecure elections in the world.
Jeez.
And California is the second worst. So, I mean, we're not second worst of the best nation. We're second worst of the worst nation. That's how bad our elections are.
Hmm. So what's the deal with voter ID? I know they found it unconstitutional federally, or is that just state to state?
It is not unconstitutional federal. The federal courts have ruled that voter ID is constitutional. So if a state passes voter ID requirements, it is permissible.
Well,
I think that's
the first step to getting this, I think, really straightened out, is having to provide ID when you go to a poll. Now, that's not to say that they won't turn around and issue a bunch of fake IDs, but...
But see, if those people aren't eligible to vote in the first place...
Right.
You know, you kind of cut them off at the pass. Besides that, you know, if you can't, the people who are swaying these elections with voters that have not been removed, I know you, when we, on the backside of this break, we should talk about people who move. That's another way. You had five ways, I think, that they mess up elections. See how good my memory is. It's been two entire weeks.
Yeah.
Well, when you've heard me 15 times, I'm going to expect you to get up on stage and get my speech for me.
Okay, so I've only heard it once, so I'm not really going to, I don't have to go directly to the rack and be stretched. But if those people weren't eligible if it wasn't available for them to cook these elections, there might be less opposition, do you think, to voter ID and some of those things? I mean, if you've already kind of tightened the screws on the ability for dead people and people who moved and all that to vote.
Well, as Secretary of State, I have the power to inspect and audit all of our elections.
Ooh.
And to start prosecutions of voter fraud. Now, most people don't realize that everybody hears this line that there's no such thing as voter fraud.
Right.
But Heritage Foundation actually has a database of, in the last 10 years, over 1,000 convictions across this nation of actual voter fraud.
Now, these are convictions of people who have voted illegally?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Because I don't know. I think in California, you know, with California now being a sanctuary state, thank goodness for that, I would think that the ability for people who are not citizens in California to vote is much higher now, especially if they're not enforcing any kind of voter integrity. Would you agree with that?
Well, the other day I talked to an individual who was running for office in San Bernardino, and he happens to be in law enforcement. And he was looking through some of the key people who were supporting his opponent, you know, who had signed nomination paperwork. And as he was looking through, he was, you know, looking it up on the database, and one of the people who were supporting his opponent, he immediately spotted, based upon the driver's license number, because he was doing it on the back end, that this person had a AB-60 driver's license. So this person...
Which is an illegal alien provisional driver's license, right?
Yes, an illegal alien provisional driver's license. This person had been able to use that ID to register to vote. Even though they tell us, if you have an AB-60 driver's license, you cannot register to vote.
Right.
This person, by simply looking at the 60 people who had signed the nomination paperwork of his opponent, realized that one of those people happened to be an illegal alien who was registered to vote and had used that AB-60 driver's license to register to vote. And they tell us that, oh, if you have an AB-60 driver's license, the systems are in place that you cannot register to vote. But they're doing no independent audits. They're doing no investigation to make sure. They just tell us that's what's going on. But we are finding, as we investigate the voter rolls, as you know, if you know what you're looking for, because these AB-60 driver's licenses have a unique number set, but you have to be trained to understand what that unique number set is. But when we see those, we are actually seeing that there are illegal aliens who are on our voter rolls, even though our government is telling us that that does not exist, that they're not on there.
We got to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about this some more, because I recently had a situation with my ID that I think folks need to be aware of.
Oh, yeah, there's that, too.
Yeah.
All right, we're here with Mark Moisher, so you can be more sure of free and fair elections.
There you go.
It's the perfect name running for Secretary of State. So if you live in a different state or a different location...
The person who controls your elections really does control the levers of power. It's worth looking into and making sure you have good folks at the front end. So Mark's running this year in the state of California. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People Radio.
Mexico, never really been, but I sure like to go. Then why, Mexico, I guess I'll have to go now. Talking about in Mexico.
Seen nothing yet. You wait till Mark gets elected.
you wait till we purge the voter rolls in California. That'll be shocking.
Yeah, we'll have 50% registration.
It'll be great.
Yeah.
Hey, so recently I went down and got my driver's license renewed, and it was a fairly painless process. While there, I noticed that they have signs everywhere, register to vote, register to vote. You know, that's fine. If you want to have people register to vote at the DMV, that's all good and well. However, when I got my new driver's license, in the top right-hand corner of the driver's license, it says, federal limits apply. Little did I know, after I read up on this, is that I guess there's a law in 2020 that you have to have what they call real ID to board an airplane, to buy a gun, a couple other things. And your driver's license, if it says federal limits apply, you can't use that. You have to have a passport, a birth certificate, Social Security, like two forms of ID. Your driver's license is no longer going to be available to you. So now I have to go back.
Because they didn't even tell you.
Because they don't even tell you when you go there. Now I got to go back and get a new one and get that federal limit supplies removed from that by taking in birth certificate, passport, blah, blah, blah. So I know, I just wanted folks to know, if they're going in to get a driver's license, beware.
Well, so
very good information and a good reminder. That is kind of the federal government's response to the state of California offering AB60 driver's license. It's like, okay, you're going to let everybody have a driver's license without proof of who they really are? Well, here, guess what? Citizens of California, they're not going to be allowed to travel. They're not going to be able to buy a gun unless they, you know, unless their state actually offers this real ID.
Exactly.
And so California, through their infinite wisdom, are basically making it harder for real Californians to, you know.
Right. Right. That's exactly what it is, too. And I was.
But they offered to, like, register you. I mean, is the DMV getting some kind of a bounty on how many voter registrations they get?
I mean, it is actually a federal law that they are required to do this. So,
but it's not a law to tell citizens that if you want to use your driver's license for ID, you better come back with some real
yeah, like we need different proof if you want an actual.
They don't offer that at all. Thank you, California. And
yeah.
So they're just another way to grab another $35 out of you to get the right driver's license.
Well, and
license.
Further benefit illegal aliens,
yeah,
over citizens.
It's crazy.
So Mark, when you decided to run for Secretary of State, did people try to talk you out of it?
Actually, I was the one who tried to talk myself out of it. When I was recruited, like, why do I want to do this? And, you know, the thing is, I'm a election law constitutional attorney. So I was one of the first attorneys that were flown into Wisconsin for the presidential recounts. So I take on the big cases. And one of the things that the people who recruited me did is they just kept on showing me stories and statistics and all the problems that were going on with our voter rolls. And it just eventually got to the place where my inner, you know, the person who wants to fight for justice, fight for what was right, realized, if not me, then who? And I realized I was in the position where I could basically put my law career aside for a whole year, put, you know, shelf the law career, and just get out and travel up and down the state of California, going to as many groups as possible, educating people on the problems that we have here in the state of California when it comes to fair and honest elections. And so that, because I was in that position and because I understood the problem and because I have the training of what the problem is and what the solutions are, it really became when the inner bulldog in me said, we got to take this battle on, and the time is now to take it on, that once I committed, there was no looking back. I'm all over the state. In the last 6 months, I've driven over 47,000 miles in the state of California.
Holy cow. Well, God bless you, because if good people don't run for office, we're going to continue down the road we're on right now. And frankly, people that run for office, it's sad, because you can be a person of great integrity and run for office, and they're going to throw so much mud at you, you wonder why people even want to sign up for it anymore.
Well, and then at the end of the day, if there's voter fraud at this level, especially in a state like this, how do we ever elect good people?
I mean,
that door will basically be shut forever if that doesn't get cleaned up.
I would love to challenge that comment right now, that, you know, Republicans can't win, that conservatives can't win, that honest people cannot win. 4 years ago, Pete Peterson was running for California Secretary of State, and he almost won the election. Even though he was outspent 7-1, he almost won the election. And there are many people who say that he would have won the election, but for the margin of fraud in Los Angeles County alone.
See, that's the tough thing right there is you can run a great race, you can run an honest race, but with this level of corruption in the election rolls or in the voter rolls.
So bottom line is Secretary of State is the most important race at the moment.
It is. You haven't got a chance. Mm-hmm. They've already stacked the deck against you. And you're right. If somebody could almost win with that system, that's pretty good.
That is good.
Now, let's take ourselves back to 1994. Let's take ourselves back to 1980, you know, when Reagan was elected. 1994, contract with America. 2010, the Tea Party wake-up. What do all three of those things have in common? There was the people of America realized that there was a problem, and they basically did a massive wholesale change of their government. Now let me go to what's going on with the issue of election integrity. There are ways that you can go in and see how often certain terms are mentioned in the media. And you can go clear back to, I think, about the 1800s, I think it is, maybe even the 1700s. And if you study the issue of election integrity, you know, I told that story in 1853, there's a problem with election integrity across the nation, and you will see a spike with how often people are talking about election integrity. Over the last 16 years, the issue of election integrity, actually, I'll say over the last 18 years since Bush v. Gore, there has been an increasing of the mention of election integrity, election fraud in the media. And it's over the last couple years, it has been really spiking. I mean, almost every day I'm seeing 2-3 articles just in the United States dealing with the issue of election integrity. What that means is people are paying more attention to their elections, paying more attention to election integrity. Does that mean much? Does that mean all of a sudden Mark Moisier is going to win Secretary of State? No, but we need to look at other measures. You know, in a recent LA Times poll, they found that 42% of California Democrats are saying that they do not like the direction that the state is going. 55% of independents do not like the direction that the state is going. What that means is that there is an opportunity to get out a message, even here in liberal, progressive California, that people are going, the way that we are going right now is not right. And as I'm traveling around the state, I am finding evidence that actually is confirming this. The other day, I was in San Francisco, and I was talking to a third-generation San Francisco City political machine operative. You know, I'm the Republican running for Secretary of State. You know, you can just imagine that this is probably not going to be the easiest conversation in the world to convince this guy of the problems of election integrity and that have going on. So I just played the attorney and I said, what are your problems that you have with the government and city of San Francisco? And he started out by talking about Kate's death and how the prosecution just absolutely bumbled that matter. He then moved to the homeless problem and the poop on the street. He then started talking about their drug problem and the needles. And then he went to the car break-ins and how the police couldn't prosecute. I like to say for 20 minutes, I thought I was talking to a Siskiyou County Tea Party patriot, not wow, a third-generation Democrat political machine party operative. People are waking up that what's going on right now is not working. And so I don't know whether that will translate in 2018 or 2020 or 2024, but there is a change going on in the state of California. I mean, we saw in the media just this week where Jerry Brown is, you know, pushing this bill that's basically going to ban the sale of Bibles in the state of California. Hey, if you don't think that's going to start waking up people that, you know, okay, you Christians don't have a First Amendment right to even buy a Bible, you know, they're starting to really overstep their bounds, whether it's the gas tax, whether it's cap and trade. You know, there is a general up that's going on. And, you know, I like to, you know, I'm a history buff. I love my history. You know, in 1774, you know, it was only about 20 to 25% of Americans wanted to separate from Great Britain. In 1775, you saw, you know, Paul Revere do his midnight ride, and you saw things up in Boston that they were starting to get really agitated with the British and try to pick them out. But even at the beginning of 1776, it was only 25% of Americans really wanted to separate from Great Britain.
We're gonna take a quick break. Let's pick this up after the break, because this is a really good point. And then also, I want to talk to you about some friends I know in Macedonia and Russia that can get you shoot in pretty easily. So we'll be back.
Our guest this hour is Mark Moisher. He is running for Secretary of State in California. Get out and vote. That was the song you were going to use when you registered for the Ironman up in Tahoe.
Going to? I actually did register for that one twice.
I know. That was the theme song, though. I saw that in your bio. I'm like, well, we got to play Eye of the Tiger. It's got to happen.
Got to happen. So to finish the story, so in 1776, at the beginning of the year, even though we'd already had the, you know, the Lexington and Concord, you know, Boston had already started fighting the British. We had only 25% of Americans wanted to separate from Great Britain. But then a guy named Thomas Paine came out and he wrote a piece that's called Common Sense. And it was spread like wildfire across the states, across the colonies. And it finally woke up the people to the tyranny that they were living under. And what I'm seeing in the state of California, with so many people fleeing the state, people are really starting to wake up to how the tyrannical policies that are coming out of Sacramento are driving their friends and their families away. And I think the people up in Northern California understand the tyranny coming out of Sacramento almost better than anybody. And what's going on is people are realizing the Democrat Party in California is not my grandmother's Democrat Party. And people are waking up to that effect, and there is starting to be what I call a tide change in the state, where people are going, oh, maybe we can't keep voting for the same politicians and expect a different result. And so that is why, you know, it is so important for people to get out and vote on June 5th. Because there are more freedom-loving patriots in California than there are of these people who are wishing to cast illegal ballots. There's only so much illegal ballots that they can cast. They can only swing a few close elections. But the thing is, they use that power very effectively. If we come out like we did in 1980 with Ronald Reagan, if we come out like we did in 1994, like we did with Newt Gingrich's contract with America, if we come out and vote like we did in 2010, if we do that in California, there is no amount of fraud that they can commit that's going to overwhelm the voice of we the people. When we the people don't contribute to the people who hold our values, when we don't go out and vote, when we do not volunteer to help them, whether it's knocking doors or making phone calls, when we don't do that, we basically secede to the those who love a tyrannical form of government, and we let them impose their tyranny upon us. And that's why it's so important in 2018 that we say, you know what, I want my state back. I want to make sure that I have a California that is truly golden again, that I can leave to my children, my grandchildren, my property, my farm, my ranch. We need to get back to a freedom-loving, you know, less government, you know, mindset. And that is coming. It is coming.
We just can't even fight the policies, though, if we can't get people in there to defend that. Because, like up in Siskiyou County, they had all sorts of voter fraud being committed, not by people in the county, but by people who came to the county to do that, to try to swing their marijuana ordinances. And when their registrar of voters went to the Secretary of State went up there and met with the illegal aliens and refused to meet with the registrar of voters and basically accused the county of racism or some fool thing. It's like, This is an important race, and we really do need to get you in there. We've got Gary Hollihan on the line, has called in with a, I don't know, question, comment.
Hello, Gary.
Fire away, Gary.
Good morning. What, quick question. Did your guest, when he was having the conversation with the Democratic operative in San Francisco, was there any realization in the conversation that it was liberal Democratic policies that caused the demise of San Francisco and all the crap in the streets? Literally, I'll take my answer on the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary.
Thanks, Gary.
So did you play the blame game?
I did not. I just set the table and let him realize what he had just said at the end. You know, it was like he talked about his issues, but, you know, somebody like that, you don't you almost have to, you lead them to water,
yeah.
You can't make them drink. You
right.
have to kind of salt the oats a little bit. And just getting him to all of a sudden realize he sounds like a Tea Party patriot from Siskiyou County, you know, that right there probably goes a long way to all of a sudden he stops and has to think, what's going on here?
Sure. And I heard, a few weeks ago that you talk about change. Nancy Pelosi's popularity is really in the toilet right now. Well, she's from San Francisco, so I guess that...
Not a lot of toilets there.
No,
you
not
got
a lot
poop
of
maps.
Yeah. But, I guess her popularity is waning, and her election isn't a shoo-in, which that in itself tells you change is coming.
Something's happening.
Yeah. For the people in the know, there is really a civil war going on in the Democrat Party here in the state of California. You know, we saw Feinstein was unable to get her party nomination. We saw Gavin Newsom, who's been kind of the anointed governor of the state for about the last 4 years, couldn't even get his party's endorsement. I mean, it was split so many ways. They are fractured right now.
Yeah, he can't pull over. Newsom can't seem to get past like 35-36%. So he is not a given.
He's like 24% right now in some of the most recent polls.
Yeah, and John Cox is like right behind him. I mean, literally, we could have two different parties on the November election if people pay attention. You know, one other thing here that we shouldn't let go, and it's I don't know if I were you, it'd be the part of the deal I hate, but is the money of elections. And I don't think people realize how much it costs to run for office. I mean,
what did you say for a governor? I mean, to
governor
run for
in
governor?
The state of California to run is $40 million.
That's not guaranteeing a win.
No, but that's if you want to hit the airwaves, TV, radio, in all of the markets in California, it was like all the TV in the state of California, and it was like for a day or two, it was like $340,000.
I mean, $10 million a week.
Yeah, okay. So
$10 million a week is what's considered a reasonable statewide TV and radio plan.
And that's just insane. I mean, that cuts so many people out of the mix. When they want to run for office, you know, a common person can't come close to raising that kind of money.
They can if the rest of the common people will let
rally
go
behind them.
Yeah, let go of some money. But I think people feel, you know, a lot of times it's like, well, you know, let them fend for themselves. Like some other magical person will pay for it. But just to hit radio and TV is hugely expensive. So the fact that you're putting that much rubber on the road to go see everybody, that makes a big difference. But it's a tough state to hit everybody.
It is a very tough state, but I have been blessed with well over 1,000 contributors to my campaign. I have almost 200 people who are doing what's called a monthly contribution to my campaign. Really helps, you know, settle things out. We're doing a good job. The thing is about a Secretary of State's race, I don't think in the last 20 years, I don't think a Republican has raised more than $1.2 million for a Secretary of State's race, which means we do not get to run TV. We do limited radio. You do a lot of social media advertising. But at the end of the day, it really comes down to volunteers who take your message and go knock doors, because it really goes down to the grassroots. $1 million is just, you know, that's about the best that you can do in this state. And it's a sad state of affairs, but at the same time, that's also the reality of what's going on. But if any of your listeners want to make a contribution to my campaign, they can go to markmeusher.com, which is markmeusher.com. My address, where if somebody wanted to mail a check, they could. It's on the website also. They can follow me on Facebook and Twitter, both of those, just by going to searching my name, markmeusher.com.
And we have posted all that on our site as well, so that, people need to get involved. And if we can switch over this one thing, Secretary of State, we can start looking at other races to be competitive. And that also includes City Council, Board of Supervisors, because illegal voting hits everything. And it's done county by county.
And I'm doing these short little interviews with people who have actually seen voter fraud in like 2014, 2016. And we're sharing those on Facebook, just short, simple, 2-minute videos, and they are going gangbusters. They are being spread up and down the nation. I had one the other day that got seen by 750,000 people. I mean, the message of our elections matter, people are really starting to pay attention to it. And people, when they hear some of these fraud stories that are going on in California, people are waking up and going, it's enough is enough. It's time to put someone in the chief election officer office who is going to actually do the job of cleaning up the voter roll.
Well,
that is fantastic.
I hope you do well, because that's a great place to start. We're out of time. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, and if you have any new developments, give us a holler. We're here every Sunday afternoon, noon to 2.
I love it.
Thanks a million, Mark Moisher, running for Secretary of State in California. Definitely a guy worth helping. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. Despite that ominous disclaimer, we will be bringing you factual information.
Yes, and it won't hurt one bit.
You know, if you want to sue them, don't do that. You don't want to do that. You can, ain't nobody got time for that. That's what's happening. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Team Power. John Deere and Kubota, the number one and number two tractor lines in the world. Come by and see them. Springtime has sprung, and I think the weather's going to hit the 80s or 90s here in the next week or two. And it's a
good
time.
Means your grass is going to be up over your knees.
Yeah, it's going to be tall. You're going to need to go out and cut that grass, plow them fields. Go in there and see them about a tractor. They're fully loaded up, stocked with all different models.
You can go in there and pick out the one that's right for you. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard, just south of Phil's Propeller there on Twin View. And their phone number is 226-9226.
And if your tractor's busted, you should take it in there, too.
Absolutely. We got top-notch mechanics in there that can fix you up and get you back on the road. So, Team Power.
Go see Uncle Bill at Team Power.
No, there's no Uncle Bill there, but you could go in anyway. Knucklehead.
I like to mess up Bill's commercial. I live to mess up Bill's commercial, and my goal is to mess it up a different way each time.
And you're very good at it.
Just one more new twist so I can get the... So I can get the look. Please give me the look. Oh, my goodness. So, back to the business at hand. Syria. We're going to switch. We're going to switch from voter fraud and all that good stuff to Syria.
Man, so, there's a lot going on in Syria right now.
There is a lot happening in Syria.
But we got the inside track.
Our guest is Bruce Moran. He's a national security advisor. He is with Security Solutions Technologies. It's a veteran-owned company, provides federal government consulting, IT professional services, security assessments, cybersecurity, geospatial. They're doing it all. Mm-hmm. If it's stuff you don't know anything about, they're doing it.
I can get him to fly a drone over your house if you don't shape up.
I'm just going to make sure you're in it while I'm there.
It's already been done.
I like to count on
nice,
you, Bruce.
Nice segue there, Bruce. So before we get too carried away, I just want to let people know, just in case they're not at their computer while they're listening, there's a giant document you sent us with all sorts of information. Maybe you could give them, how about this, the sales pitch on the document, because I think people should go read it.
That's the one that's called Syria Arms Control?
Yep, and yeah. I posted it in long form and in a downloadable PDF.
Yeah, one of the things we need to take a look at is that Syria has signed their ban on chemical weapons that dates back to September 12th of 2013. So if we move forward, President Trump and his National Security Council, him in particular, he has the gut instinct just to pull out. I'm in total agreement with that. It's not only the chemical weapons, it's the entire situation of the civil war that's been going on since, we can say, the Arab Spring in 2011. So that's like April. So this is not something that's current. It's fomenting over years. There's no resolutions. We should probably have other, as we pull out, though, there needs to be, like what happened in Iraq, we don't want that to happen in Syria. If we're pulling out, then the European Union and the United Nations and other Arab countries should take over where we've been and start to, you know, move forward on our policy and our program, and then they can continue on, you know, and adjusting the program and the policy to contain the radical faction of ISIL that's still there, or ISIS. And then we have the Nusra Front that's there in the northern part of Syria, and that's, they're called HT now, and that's still a terrorist organization. That's Al-Qaeda with another name on it. They are Al-Qaeda, and they've formed HT, which is like 5, 6, 7 different Islamic groups.
Great.
So they come in and out. So they were initially fighting with ISIS. They broke away, and then they started to control the northern part of Iraq. So that's a big problem. And it's been ongoing for, like I was saying, 6.5, 7 years. And we held negotiations, you know, with them at a convention in Geneva, and that really never boiled down to anything. And then we helped get ISIS out of Iraq, and we're doing our over our share. We're carrying the, you know, a heavy load in Syria, and the Russians did too. And it's time to say adios, amigos. You know, this is not anything that we're fully vested in terms of our national security interests. It is, but it's not more our concern. It's just as much the European Union's concern as it is the Arab nation's concern. So that's what I'm saying. We're in there. We're battling away, and it's time for somebody else to take over.
Right.
Well, that makes sense. And then you hear all these people who say if we do that, like Bill was listening to something this morning, that if we pull out of there, then all of a sudden you get a whole bunch of other bad guys fill the void.
No, that's not what I'm saying. It's time for the European Union Germany, Britain, bring in their special forces there. Let the Kuwaitis, let the Saudis bring in the Jordanians. Jordanians are taking a heavy brunt of this because they got a huge amount of refugees there, too,
mm-hmm.
from this. So, you know, and even in Turkey, I think with the last, I think it was 6.1 million refugees coming from there. It's the largest refugee crisis since World War II. And we're not including the displaced people that came from both Iraq and Syria. They're both in the countries. They're still trying to get back into their homes. And we're not talking about the refugees that came from Iraq. So we have a whole slew of, I call it a Pandora's box. I wrote a report on this in 2013, that it's just way out of hand. And we've done our share, more than our share. Now it's time for other people to step in for us.
Exactly. As far as Syria goes, I think what Aaron was referring to was one of the lines of thought is that if the U.S. pulls out and the other countries don't step in and start carrying the load to keep these guys at bay, then you're going to have Russia, Iran, and Syria all kind of gang up and kind of take over that region. Would you agree with that?
No, not at all.
Okay.
If you have France in there and Britain, they're permanent members on the UN Security Council.
Right.
If you saw what happened here, it was the United States, United Kingdom, Britain, and France. They're permanent members on the UN Security Council. So they're the ones that did the strike here just recently.
Okay. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, let's clarify that a little bit. As who's out there right now to pick up the slack if the U.S. pulls out of Syria.
Okay.
Yeah, what the heck? You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me.
So there you have it.
It's the best intro I could give you, Bruce.
Yeah, while we're talking about, you know, the UN having a situation that has to deal with chemical weapons, and that's the reason why we went into, because the chemical weapons themselves are very, very not only dangerous, but they're easily to disperse.
Right.
You have them as nerve agents, vesicants, blood agents, choking agents. You see them using riot control and the psychometric points. So that's all the things that happen with people when you lose their feeling, get paralysis and rigidity in their body. I mean, as I looked at it, on the whole, they signed on to the, Syria signed on to the convention to stop the chemical weapons abuse, and those things can be dispersed immediately in the area. And, of course, in Europe. And where have the refugees gone and where has ISIS gone? They've gone to Europe. So if you're asking me who should be participating in the council or to have it done, the United Nations Security Council, or, as we would formally say, a coalition, you'd probably draw up a UN security resolution and then have these particular countries come on board and then commit to a certain amount of troops. We have 2,000 troops there, so that's not a significant amount, but it's, you know, special forces. So they have the firepower and they have the backup. You know, they have aircraft carriers there and, you know, submarines.
But the problem with the UN is, I mean, look at it right now. This chemical attack happened, 2 weeks ago, and they still haven't got access to the site. And what's the UN doing? I mean,
I'm talking about, this is a that's two different discussions.
Okay.
Okay, this, the current, you're going tangentially on me. Now, this,
that Bill, gotta watch him every minute.
Yeah, he saw the seven questions I wrote on it. That's why he wants to go there.
he's cheating off the
syllabus. And those are serious questions. But we're talking about all the attacks that have occurred in the European Union, you know, the countries from ISIS and the jihadists, they should be very concerned about how this is going to happen and goes down later in Syria. If you're asking me who should be on the coalition, there's, you know, everybody in Europe should be, you know, sending somebody.
Right.
As you always see the strong hold of the British, because they have a great group of, you know, SAS, Special Forces people, and they, you know, they can come in there immediately. This is not new to them. You bring the French in there, and you also bring in their, you know, their frigates and stuff to support them, you know, if they need to shoot a cruise missile. As you saw, the Brits and the French were also shooting missiles, too. So this was a, you know, the three permanent members on the UN Security Council taking control and making sure that a strong and hard message was sent not only to Russia, but to Syria, you know, because we have an interest in there to make sure that chemical weapons aren't going to be dispersed throughout Europe. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
So that makes more, to me, common sense that as we're pulling out, then other people will pull in to make sure that they should support the efforts that we established and they can continue forward on a strategy. Or they might have a different strategy, you know, in what they want to do and have some resolution with the Syrian government and the Russians. Because it's not only the Russians, it's Hezbollah and it's the Iranians there, too.
Right.
So they're operating in full force. And Nusra Front, as I said later, is HT, which is an arm of Al-Qaeda that operates up north and in Lebanon also. So as we're looking at this entire picture, I'm trying to give more of an educational, you know, view of it so we know what we're doing there and the logic for our, you know, national security justification for, you know, what we want to do there, what we've done, and now it's time for other people to be concerned about the national security of their countries too, along with ours. As I said, we took the larger yoke to carry forward. Now it's time for them, you know, to come on and, you know, substitute their troops, their missiles, their submarines, their frigates, their, you know, their vessels, you know, their air force. And that,
right.
That's not really that difficult. It's just, you know, the commitments and, you know, they have to really get on board. Macron is here and they're having the first dinner.
Right.
So maybe President Trump may want to introduce that to him. But we're also going through North Korean, you know, talks. It's never been done before with Kim. So there's a lot of things to bring to the table. And North Korea has not signed on to the chemical weapons ban. So if they're going to the denuclearization program, then I think maybe they could, if that's part of the negotiations. I don't know what Mike Pompeo did, but there's a chemical weapon part of this also that can be addressed because they're not on board at all. So, you know, Sudan, South Sudan, Egypt, and North Korea have not signed on to the chemical weapons ban at all. So that's what we're looking at there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the serious part of this discussion. And let's take a look at what we did. I think that's important.
Yeah, do you think it was
effective?
Because
how we conducted our mission
right.
is a very important part of understanding how we did it, what we did, and to what extent, you know, we went forward. And there wasn't any collateral damage to civilians, and that's how precise the bombing was. That's how exact it is. That's how sophisticated we were. And what I'm also saying here is Kim also saw this. He saw us drop the mother of all bombs in Afghanistan. He saw the first Syrian strike, and he saw this one, which is much more, you know, exact and a lot
more
firepower.
Mm-hmm.
If I was Kim, and I'm looking at this and I'm saying, sure, I want to come to the table now. You know, it's not only that the sanctions are being effective, but I don't want to be on the other side of the receiving end of this kind of weaponry coming at me and my people in North Korea.
Right. No, I think that's a huge part. I think it did open his eyes because it was a very surgical strike. We haven't heard of any collateral damage. I think everything we aimed at, we hit. Do you think it was
effective as far as stopping it? It was a highly coordinated CENTCOM attack.
Uh-huh.
We're from three different theaters.
Right.
What we call platforms.
And
the Red Sea, the Northern Arabian Gulf, and the Eastern Mediterranean Sea. That's a highly sophisticated, you know, you're shooting off 105 missiles and they're all coming in at the same time. You know, that's something to take into consideration. I'm talking
sure.
about Kim and Assad. It's a, and the Russians know this.
Right.
The Russians did not help when these missiles started coming in.
Right.
They knew, you know, not to get involved there. They wanted to see what happened. They saw it, and they said, oh, my God, this
right.
is much more than they probably would assume than how it actually took place. So
well, I saw
thought it
some
was
of the,
a well-done job. The president did a great job. You know, the British did a great job, May and Macron. It was just a well-executed plan. Of course, the United States took, you know, a larger part of the lead here. But, you know, it's not just the United States anymore, like I'm saying. It's everybody's business to be concerned about chemical weapons, to be about, it's about where they are at, who has them, and how to make sure they don't have them anymore. So if he signed on in 2013, Assad, and he still has them, you know, this is a problem. Because
mm-hmm.
we have a base in Haifa. You know, we have our bases in Signalia. You know, if they're going to be attacking, you know, he can attack in a lot of different places on the European theater, on the Libya front, come from there. You know, there's all kinds of places that ISIS and different kinds of factions can, once they have access to chemical weaponry, they can use them. And it's an atrocity.
Well,
I mean, I'm beside myself if I have to go into the, you know, the emotional impact it takes, you know, to, you know, help the people out there. They've been exposed to this, you know, so.
I saw pictures before and after on some of the targets that they hit. And, I mean, you want to talk about surgical. They showed pictures of these plants that were, I mean, completely obliterated. And right across the street, there were buildings that weren't touched. So it was, I mean, if I was looking at that as somebody to be on the wrong end of an attack like that, they hit exactly what they were aiming at and nothing else. It was pretty impressive. Do you think it was effective as far as stopping their ability, though, to make more? I mean, do you think we hit enough?
No, we put a dent in it.
Right.
So, yeah, and it was a surgical strike, so it was enough to send a big message. We hit one of their bunkers, you know, where they store it. We hit one of the factories where they make it, you know, and then we hit one of the research and development. That's huge. But as we know, to make camp, it's only about, you know, to reinstitute, to reconstitute it, they call it. Those are the words they use. It's only about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So if they signed on in 2013, if you go 6 months after that, and they had scientists there, you know, it's not hard to make these things. It comes from fertilizers. It comes from organic compounds. I took all the information off on that because if you look at it, it gives other people ideas about how you can make this stuff.
Oh, sure.
You know?
Right.
Yeah, we don't want to be posting that.
All you need is a master's degree in chemistry. And you can go far enough to start making something. It's not going to be large, significant, but it's enough to, you know, make enough compound to hurt a lot of people.
So what do you think Russia, what their position on this is? I mean, we hear a lot about how they're backing Assad. This kind of puts them in a little bit of a precarious situation, doesn't it, to be on the wrong side of this chemical attack?
Yeah, they're backing what we would consider a United Nations international law. But at the same time, Syria is violating the international law. So you have this very big dilemma of what's happening in the area and how you're dealing with the jihad terrorists. And Assad was fighting them. Of course, he's fighting al-Qaeda too. But he's also trying to preserve his government. So what I'm talking about, the UN Security Council and the UN itself doesn't call for regime change.
Right.
you know, that's what was our message to Assad. We're not looking for regime change. We're looking for just get rid of those chemical weapons and you deal with your civil war. There were a lot of countervailing forces and many, many, I call it militant groups or jihadist groups in that region. And some of them are mercenary and they go where the money's at. You also have the Kurds there. And you have the problems that are arising between the Kurds and the Turks. It gets, you know, very insidious on who's doing what and at what time, and then they change sides. And the Kurds are going to protect the Kurds' interests there and in Iraq. You know, they think they deserve it. They were gassed in, I think, 98, 99 by Saddam Hussein. So they had to deal with it there themselves. So they understand the dynamics, but in terms of we're talking about a Pandora's box, it's a really hard situation for anybody to be there on a consistent level and deal with. Now, how I would probably analyze this would be when you're in a no-go zone and you're flying there and then you're trying to help people and you can't help them. You know, that's a terrible situation to be in and trying to help in a humanitarian way. And that's why you're looking at this large exodus of people that are refugees from Syria. Nobody really addressed this from the get-go. We are dealing with Iraq, and that was our baby. You know, we were finishing up with Saddam Hussein, and, you know, then they had their transitional government come in, then they had elections, and, you know, we pulled out, and Barack Obama took over, and, you know, he did what he thought was necessary, and we saw at the end there that he didn't leave any troops and left a void for ISIS to come in and take over Mosul, which became their capital. They had two capitals, Raqqa, and which is in Syria, and Mosul. And when they took over Mosul, they got all their armaments. They had all the U.S. Tanks and vehicles. You know, they had the ones with the machine guns on it, the turrets, and that's where you saw them running all the way down to Fallujah.
Yeah, that was really generous of us to.
Was the problem with the
make that all available.
With the Iraqis not guarding it and not protecting it.
Right. I understand that. We didn't do it on
but
purpose.
But we left them enough to protect themselves, and they didn't do it. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah,
all right. We've got to take a quick break. We're here with our guest, Bruce Moran, talking about Syria and all things connected. You've got a really good document on there online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I switched on the radio and nearly dropped it. So bad that I fell out of bed. There was a gas strike, oil strike, lorry strike, a bed strike. Gotta be a Superman to survive. Gas bills, rent bills, tax bills, phone bills. I'm such a wreck.
There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds. Are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stopped. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
And that's why we have Bruce on.
That's right.
So we can find out what's going down.
Hey, Bruce, what's happening with Turkey and Saudi Arabia? Did Saudi Arabia have a coup attempt last night? Did you hear anything about that?
I haven't been following that. I've been looking at the... there's always, I would say, different kinds of interplays that are happening between the powers, and Turkey is sometimes, it looks like they shouldn't be part of the European Union, they want to be, and Erdogan, he's... Yeah, I saw some of that, you know, and somebody actually emailed me on it, and I said, well, I can't make a comment on it yet until I can kind of figure out the different points of departure where I can make a legitimate salient point, and kind of too early for me to see what's going on there. The Saudis are probably, you know, working to help support efforts in southern Syria, Because if that goes, then you have this, we have a base in Haifa, which is in Israel. This is very complicated. That's why I'm trying to think of a good answer to give you. I did see that, but I couldn't answer, you know, definitively on how this complicated issue in Syria, and this is South Syria I'm talking about, where they had a ceasefire, and now it's starting to end.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see a different change in the scope of how maybe U.S. policy will happen and how the United Nations will act and the different plays between the Saudi government, who's just changed hands. You know that, right? The Saudis, you know, had gone through a great transformation in their own government in the last 6-7 months.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. This is much more complicated in how we're going to address this issue, and I call it a Pandora's box. It really is, you know, on steroids, because you have these different factions, and you don't know where they're at, what they're doing, how they're doing it. So if southern, here's a good example. If southern Syria seems to have problems and starts to fail, that gives ISIS a window to come in. I mean, that's one way of looking at it. I don't think it's the only way, but it leaves it vulnerable. You see what I'm talking about?
Yep. Yep.
So, and Turkey's up, you know, they've taken their amount of large refugees in, but they've been fighting the Kurds. You know, they send tanks over there, and the Kurds are fighting them back. So, and who's fighting there? You know, part of the war is being fought in Syria, too. And the Kurds are fighting, you know, against this. They want their independence. They want to be recognized in the government, you know. And I'm talking about the Syrian government.
Right.
So there's all these different problems they're having. What I like to really address, and that's what you talked about earlier, is the chemical weapons,
right,
the inspections, and that's pretty important, because this carries forward to what happens around the world and what the UN inspectors are going to do when there's a high possibility that chemical weapons are in an area and are not being correctly addressed.
Yeah, because they haven't been able to get in there yet, have they, or are they in there now?
It's complicated in a way, because I want to talk about first that they should have been in there.
Right.
Because Syria signed the ban in 2013. How come they weren't there in the first place? See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If we're sending missiles in, how come the UN inspectors weren't there to help prevent the chemical weapons from being reconstituted in Syria? Are you going to come in? You're going to go out. You're going to go in. You're going to go out. You're going to come in. You know.
Well, that's what I mean about the UN. It's kind of a mess. They don't seem to be able to.
That's what we're talking about.
Do the job they're supposed to be doing. This. Yeah.
Exactly. I think you're right, and I'm not saying I'm right or wrong. I'm just saying, if you want to look in practical terms, and this country has chemical weapons, you should have UN inspectors there all along. It's one of the only countries in the world that didn't come on and sign on until 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been used, you know, thereafter. So if it wasn't the Syrian government, if it was the al-Nusra Front, HT, if it was one of the rebel groups that had chemical weapons or biological weapons, you really want to know what's going on. They've had like seven or more incidences of this. This is uncalled for. That's what I'm saying.
Right. And we still don't know, do we?
We have indications, you know, but, you know, that's why we, you know, shot the missiles over there.
Mm-hmm.
That's what, you know, the CIA and, I can't talk on that matter. I can talk about what I'm looking at and what hasn't been done. So what I'm talking about is the Hague is where the UN protocol is to send the chemical weapons inspectors in. They need to have a fast track when something like this happens. That's what I think you're saying. They need,
right,
a rapid response chemical weapons team to come out right away. The Russians went in there 3 and 4 days after it happened.
Yeah, they claim that they were there right after it happened, and
Russians are claiming that it took too long for the UN to get their chemical weapons inspectors in there. So what does that mean? How come Russia wasn't working? This is my perspective. How come Russia wasn't working with the UN inspectors when their troops were going in there to look at what happened to bring them along with?
Right.
You can't have it both ways.
No.
You can't say they're not in there and they're not doing it, and the UN didn't have permanent inspectors in there. There's something wrong in this picture, and the picture is, if they had chemical weapons in Syria, but they're also maybe in other areas, how come we don't know right away? If the Russians are going in there, that's Putin's responsibility to take the chemical weapons inspectors from the UN with him right there to do a what? A cursory review, you know, to give a basic report, if you can't give a full report, and give it back to the UN, give it to the Russians, and give it to the UN Security Council. That's what I would consider a proper and fitting thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if you listen to his or their talk there in the UN when him and Nikki Haley were kind of bantering back and forth, they were claiming that they had already been in there and that Syria wasn't responsible. Well, how did they know that? Why, and like you say, why wasn't the UN involved in that initial inspection?
Yes, sir. That's exactly the point.
Mm-hmm.
And Nikki Haley's right on. She's great too.
I think she's awesome.
She's been a great UN ambassador. You know,
mm-hmm.
We were working with her on the Christian genocide too. So there's other aspects to this. You know, when ISIS came through, I mean, you have that part of it, the human rights violations there. See, if you look at chemical weapons, it's human rights violation, but you look at how the people are being treated themselves, that's human rights violations too. So the Civil War itself left a lot of displaced people as well as refugees. And that's a humongous problem to deal with. That's why I'm saying if we go back to the beginning of our conversation, we need to address the people who are going to take our place there. The places where all the refugees went, and then where all ISIS infiltrated their countries. And if they get access to chemical weapons, you know, there goes Britain, there goes, you know, the Netherlands, there goes Belgium, there goes Italy. They'll start using it there. That's why you got to contain it in the area we know it's absolutely at, and restrict it and have the chemical weapons inspectors in there right now.
Well, do you think those countries will stick around?
Far beyond the scope. I'm upset personally because we were in there in Iraq, you know, and that was in 2003, and a lot of these things were fomenting over the time, and it was never really. Well, President Trump is absolutely right. We didn't do the right things for 20, 30 years here. Finally, he's putting his foot down, saying we got to get stuff done. You know, you draw a red line, you keep it. We're going to go in there. We're going to tell you we don't want to do it. Okay, I'm pulling out of negotiations. You know, if you do it, then we'll be there. We'll back you up. But we can't be the policeman to the world. That's what
no.
I'm saying.
Right.
No, and I agree with that. My only concern is when we pull out of Syria, which I think he's serious about that. I think we are going to pull out. Will these other countries stick around and get the job done in our absence? I mean, they got skin in the game. They need to do that. But you think they'll be willing to, maintain a presence over there if we're not?
Well, that's a million-dollar question. No, I guess that's the billion-dollar question.
Yeah.
That's today.
Million bucks doesn't buy anything anymore.
If you're going to send troops in there, it's going to be $1 billion, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When we grew up, it was a little less. So
$1 million, yeah.
that used to be a staggering amount. Not so any longer.
Me just passed away, so, you know, they had that on the news.
Who did?
Minnie Me.
He did?
Yeah, that was just the last 2 days.
Oh, wow.
No, I didn't hear that.
So $1 million has changed a lot.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And for all those people who don't know what we're talking about, that was
our forces
Austin Powers
all over
reference.
The world. And we, I'm saying policemen to the world, but we also have bases there that have to be sustained and protect our interests at home.
Right.
And if this isn't be ongoing, we can't be doing it ongoing there. We've done our share. And it's time for them to take over. And President Trump saying the same thing. Let's get people in there that can do the job, get the job done, and make sure that they can carry forward on a strategy. It doesn't have to be ours. It could be other things that can happen. It can be Assad could agree to another election, or, you know, they just had one, and a lot of people didn't participate. but it's because it was controlled by rebel groups. It's controlled by, like I say, Nusra Front, or it's called HG now. So how can you participate if it's that, you know, I think 55% of the country participated in the election? That was one of the questions I had at the end there. You know, how that's what I'm talking about. If it's so volatile, and we're calling it Pandora's box, that you can't get a handle on it, let some other people come in and take over and kind of figure out maybe there's other ways to work things out. We've done our best, and it's not always firepower. You know, we've definitely exhibited we have the firepower to come in. We've also did sanctions, so we have the power economically to do it. We've also done diplomatic, you know, relations, and they've broken down. So let other people take control and let them step up and show that they can be responsible adults in handling this serious situation. See what I mean?
Yeah, because obviously the adults in charge are
responsible adults.
Not doing
responsible
it.
Responsible countries. We can't be adult supervision everybody every time, any place, anywhere.
which is probably good, because we're not always good at it either. But I got to say, we're way ahead of these folks. We have to take a really quick break.
Okay.
Little celebration of capitalism here. You are listening to We the People. We'll be right back. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
My hand behind a gun, I'll make my final stand. Bad company, I can deny.
Just this one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
See, they could be a lot happier. Whiskey for the men, beer for the horses. You don't have to gas anybody. It's not required.
No.
We need to go back to the Wild West. Get rid of all this chemical crap. So Bruce, we hear all sorts of conflicting things coming from all over the place. What do you think the advantage? I mean, the administration being involved in this, they kind of have to. They don't really have a choice. But they seem to get a black eye over everything. How do they get out of this without getting a black eye?
Well, I think the panel. What we're looking at is a policy change that the previous administrations haven't really carried forward on, and that is not a interventionist type of policy where you go around the world, but having a more liquid policy where you use your special forces, your SEAL teams, your special ops groups, more sparingly, and allow things to work themselves out. I think it's a policy change that is happening in the National Security Council. We have a new National Security Council head, John Bolton. He's been there, and he's done many of these things, and he also knows what needs to be changed. McMaster just stepped down, and we have also a conditional response we need to have on a permanent basis with the Caliphate State, the ISIS jihadists, the Islamic jihadists. And that's another overriding problem there in Syria and Libya. So if you're asking me how do we address it, what are we going to do, how are we going to do it, it's a larger strategy. It involves a lot of different, I would call playbooks, to address it when it happens. It's always going to be in the here and now. As we're looking at chemical weapons, we know that Syria signed on, but they didn't go forward with it. North Korea didn't sign on. South Sudan didn't sign on. And Egypt didn't sign on to the chemical weapons ban. Then we got to worry about the nuclear capability of Iran. And that's part of this Middle East crisis, I would call it, problem. And these are interlinking high-end commitments we are going to be making. So as the Saudis are changing their, I would call it national security policy, and it's more on board with us, you see it helping support Israel. Israel is taking a new direction, so they're being more supported by us. As you knew that Netanyahu wasn't supported by the past administration, so you know they actually supported groups on the ground to run against him. So we have now a better position. It's more solid, but it has to be a more fluid national security strategy. And that's what President Trump's looking at. So as Ron Paul will be a non-interventionist, you know, with a libertarian policy, President Trump isn't like that because he knows we're all over the world and we have to really deal with a situation. I'm viewing it more in a practical sense where we understand the strategical objectives of our country, our national security import to protect our own citizens, and then how we're going to implement the program in a long run through our, you know, CIA, through our Defense Department to make sure that we are doing everything possible to protect United States citizens. That's where a lot of people are getting this wrong. We're not there to protect other citizens per se. We have national security interests and we have humanitarian interests, of course. But it's the first and primal. If the United States doesn't exist and we go down, then everything else falls apart.
Yeah, it's funny. The humanitarian side of it seems to be the part that people don't understand is the right word.
I would say that.
It's kind of a, hey, you know what, it's a long way away, you know. It's too bad, but it's their own guys, so you know, we can't be involved in everything.
Yeah, you can take a hard line approach that way and say, let's not get involved at all, but you do have to intercede when it's absolutely necessary. You see what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I see what you mean. It's interesting, though. It's the same people who are, you know, having a love fest over Earth Day, so it's just kind of funny to me.
Well,
very conflicting.
You know, I'm an environmentalist. I'm a conservationist myself, but I'm practical.
Oh, okay, so we can still like you without breaching our principles, then?
Pardon?
We can still like you without breaching our own principles. Because I'm still going to litter on Earth Day, because that's the one day a year I litter.
They want to take walks in the park. They want to, you know, enjoy the outdoors. Whitewater rafting, everything, you know, all the stuff that you can do, camping, you know, be out in nature. I don't think anybody's against that. Protect your wildlife refugees, you know, support the, you know, national forest. That's all part of what we do.
Yeah, but we don't have to hug all the trees.
Well, there's when you go excessive.
We get a lot of hugging out here.
Yeah, well,
I realize in Chicago you're not overrun with public land.
But everywhere. And I'm not saying they're good or bad. I mean, their intentions are good.
No, it's bad.
But how they're implementing their strategies are not always proper and fitting for the organizations they belong to. Some of them are more radical, and they cause problems, as we saw in South Dakota. I mean, they become not only radicalized, but they cause, you know, they can kill people too. So you got the extreme parts in all these different groups, and some of them think you need to take it to the nth degree.
Yeah.
That's where, you know, it goes wrong, because they're not understanding the larger dynamic that this country is for all of us.
Well, that is a radical idea right there. I don't know who led you to believe that was factual.
Yeah, that's true.
How dare you? See, that's why they have that big disclaimer at the beginning of the hour. You know, because now we're just talking nonsense.
You know, the derogatories, you know, everything else, you know, because they want to pit one side against the other, Americans against Americans. We're not Americans against Americans. The political parties are doing that to make sure that they get elected. And that's a strategy. But I'm not part of that. I'm the national security people. You know, well, you want to make sure everybody's protected. We want to make sure our borders are protected. You know, that's a whole different ball game when you start getting into the wedge issues. You know,
the wedge issue.
I think
everything's a wedge issue these days.
And they make it.
Yeah, I was going to say, and if it isn't, they're working on it. There's like a whole. They must be. They have a whole think tank.
John was on before me, and he's running for Secretary of State, and a lot of that has to do with not having a secure border.
Yes. I was going to ask you, we have 2 minutes. Can you give us an update on the border? No pressure.
Well, Chuck was on, and General Valle was on, and they're talking about different strategies for implementing on the border, and maybe you might want to have them on a different show, or Chuck and I, or Doug.
Yeah. Is it looking up? I mean, are we going the right direction?
Yeah, you need a border.
Well, no, I mean, like, is policy and...
General Lay was saying, he was saying that if you go back in time, and this might be hard for some people, and I'm not being, you know, sarcastic or critical or cynical.
Oh, come on.
But you have to really take a look at the history of our border. And we used to have our troops down there. I'm talking about military troops.
Right.
Now we switch to border security, immigration, naturalization. But we're not doing what we're supposed to do, protect our borders. And
right.
Jerry Brown's your governor, and now he's taking some flack.
Rub it in.
Some of these mayors are saying, we don't want it either. We don't want your policies. We don't want sanctuary cities. It's causing problems. There's criminal activity going on, you know. So, as you can see, it's the MS-13, and it's just not that. It's the drug cartels. And as I pointed out, I think it was maybe 3 months ago, the drug business in the United States, not just coming across the border, but once it gets into the United States, it's somewhere in the $325 billion to $750 billion range. So you wonder why our kids are on opium in the high schools, and they're overdosing in colleges. It's happening on the streets in Chicago, in L.A., in New York, in St. Louis, in Baltimore, in Miami.
It's just like everything else. You follow the money.
And that's a heck of a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And
yep,
that influences a lot of different people in positions. That's what I'm saying. So this idea of national security is far-reaching. The strategy that President Trump has in place is addressing it. And if people don't want to get on board, I think there's something wrong on their program.
Well, Jerry Brown's got it all figured out. I think in the near future, he'll come out with a program to where we can just get rid of our borders and... sing Kumbaya and
we'll become Mexifornia.
Bibles, and yeah, we'll be okay. We'll be okay.
Can I have a closing statement?
Thank
you for having me on always. You know, God bless America. God bless everybody in Ukraine and Europe. And I hope we can address this Syrian crisis. And we got one coming up with North Korea, and the president's addressing it excellently. And you're doing a great job on your radio station to help us all out understand a lot of these things that are going down. Glad you had the Secretary of State on. He's trying to make a change there, too.
Absolutely.
You guys are doing a great job.
Well, I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Bruce.
And we'll have you on again. A lot going on to talk about.
Keep us posted, and thanks for all the info. Have a great day.
You're welcome.
You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.